You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by the team at Food Matters Live. Welcome to Table Talk, a guide to the future of food and nutrition. These podcasts explore the innovations, the big ideas, and some of the wilder ideas as well in the food industry by talking to the visionaries that make them happen. We dig deep and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer. I'm a TV presenter and I'm a gastronaut. Today on Table Talk, we're continuing our exploration of green jobs. As the climate crisis transforms our world, careers are set to change and sustainability will become an integral part of work. But what is a green job and where do the opportunities lie? In this series, we've spoken to people at the cutting edge of vertical farming and artificial intelligence, lots of small companies growing fast. But now it's the turn of the big beasts from the more traditional food sector, and they don't come much bigger than Unilever. So I'm delighted to be joined by Dorothy Shaver, Global Marketing Sustainability Lead at Unilever. Dorothy, welcome to you.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a great, great joy. Now, just before we get into your career and your trajectory and things like that, a little personal question. I'm interested in your own sort of green awakening because you're a registered dietitian, but you've got this extraordinary job title, Global Marketing Sustainability Lead. It's a huge job. When were you bitten by the sustainability bug? Was it something integral to what you did, or is it something that crept up on you by tiny little incremental moves?
Yeah, I have to say that it's been more of a journey rather than an awakening. I grew up in a family that was pretty eco-conscious, and I really realized pretty quickly that food has an impact on much more than just our health. So my first interest was, of course, the impact of food on our health, and then it moved to really be about looking at the impact of food beyond just our health, but also on the planet. And then I really learned a lot about, you know, if we do want to move toward a healthier population as a result of good food, the only way to really do that is by looking at the whole food ecosystem, not just the consumption part.
It's almost integral to being a dietitian, I guess, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. So, and I think, you know, I think as we've kind of moved on in the looking at food, you can't just look at it in one little silo. You can't just look at the consumption part. You can't just look at the growing part. You have to actually look at it all the way kind of from seed to plate, as I like to say, and look at the impact along the way when we really try to see, you know, how we can make better food choices along the whole chain.
Now, when I left education, I'm pretty sure that the job of Global Marketing Sustainability Lead would have been a hippie's secret dream. It just didn't exist. And so, the world is changing and the world of work is hugely changing right now. Are you surprised to be doing what you're doing now? Or is it just a sort of the path that makes sense?
For me, it was very much a continuation. I will hope that in the future, the name sustainability isn't in anybody's title because it's in everybody's title.
Yeah.
So I'm flattered and I absolutely love this job. And I kind of came into it as a sequence of roles in Unilever, and moving into, you know, working in sustainability and marketing has been a fabulous journey. And I've been able to do some really impactful work that has been very much supported by the business. And I'm really positive about that. And it does seem as a normal trajectory looking back. But if you said when I started my career as a clinical dietitian in a rehab center, if I would be working in a big global company in sustainability and marketing, I would have said, no way. I don't even think I even knew where the Netherlands was even. So even just location-wise, I don't think it would have been. And also, I'm a hippie at heart. So just even kind of thinking about working in a big company when I was in university was kind of out of my league and my reach and my desire.
And I think we'll get onto that strange dichotomy between the two, because it must be a sort of tricky thing to get to. But first of all, can you explain what you do? What is a global marketing sustainability lead, and what do you do on a day-to-day basis?
Well, every day is quite different, so that's hard to say. But I do a lot of three things, I would say: revising and advising. So I look at the projects that we're working on, I look at the products that we're going to put on the market, and I look at our communication. And I say, you know, can we tweak this to integrate more information about what we're doing in relation to how we're growing foods that are better for the planet and how we're helping people eat foods that are better for the planet. And how can we articulate that in different communications to different groups? So whether it be, you know, in a program that we're doing on the ground in Indonesia, in schools or in communities, or whether it be something that we're working on in, you know, the COP26 world and how we want to articulate what we're doing. So I do a lot of that in looking at how can we tweak our language to encourage people to eat food that's better for the planet? How can we tweak our products to be better for the planet? And how can we tweak our communications to the bigger kind of NGO, government, business world to make sure that we're articulating it in a way that makes sense? So that's one big piece. A second big piece that I do is work on what we do on our agricultural side. So how we grow our ingredients and what we do from a sustainability perspective. So we have a lot of ambitions when it comes to looking at growing foods in sustainable ways. And now we've moved into regenerative agriculture. So I work with our supply teams on that. So I work with procurement and our supply chain teams in that space. And I also work kind of in this thought leadership piece. And, you know, what do we need to do to continue to be a brand and a company that is seen as really moving people to make sustainability commonplace. So those are some thought leadership pieces that I do in writing different things, whether it be in a magazine or editorial, or whether it be something that we publish, such as the Future 50 Foods, or whether it be something about, you know, what we're doing in the media. So those are, I think, the big chunks. I do a lot of kind of talking about sustainability within our community and also externally. So that's also a big piece of what I do. So it's a bit of a different role than other roles in marketing and also in other sustainability roles along the company. So it's a very unique role, and it allows me to utilize my nutrition background very much hand in hand with what I've really learned about how to really move forward to fix the food system through a really big company and through our really big food brand.
I just want to jump into the conversation for a second to remind you about another podcast in our Green Jobs series. It's the episode which kicked off the series, a great chat with Professor David Ray, government advisor on this topic. We were looking at green careers, imminent changes in the industry, and his own innovative farm on the west coast of Scotland. He's a really inspiring talker, so if you want to see what the future might look like, check out that episode on the website at foodmatterslive.com. And while you're there, why not browse through the whole archive. There's a huge amount there. Now, back to the chat. I'm interested in the big company, as you say, because I think a lot of companies, you know, their shareholders wanted to see some response to questions of sustainability, and they started to change the formats of their companies a little bit. But was it clumsy to begin with? You know, on the first day of your job, did you turn up and people went, oh God, there's the bloody global marketing sustainability lead, and that now nothing's going to get tricky? Or did they, were you welcomed with open arms? And has that changed since you started and up to the point that we're at now?
Sometimes it feels like I'm pushing water uphill, but that has been the feeling from the beginning of my career, working in nutrition and being a dietitian. My ambition really is to make people really love to eat food that's better for them and better for the planet. So I constantly am trying to shake and shift that, but I would be lying if I said that when I put a time hold in someone's calendar that says, let's talk about how to invest in regenerative agriculture, I don't think right from the start it was something that people were jumping for joy to talk about. I have to admit, it comes with an on cost, it comes with an investment. It isn't really yet seen as a differentiator or a competitive edge for the mass consumer. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to justify an investment in growing our foods in better ways, in shifting our ingredients to be, you know, spelt instead of regular wheat or quinoa instead of white rice. And it's a hard push. And if it was easy, everybody would be doing it. And if it was just as you know, delicious and easy to eat, great for ourselves and the planet, everybody would be doing it. So I have to give everybody that I speak to the benefit of the doubt that, you know, it is hard. And it is something that you have to be in it with me for the long haul, which is hard because that's not really the way marketing works.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm also interested in this idea that you know, you said you're a hippie at heart, and I think a lot of us have that at our hearts, and then we change a bit as the force of life and the need to raise our kids and have a house and things like that changes things a bit. Now, has there been a shift that's been tricky for you to deal with to combine your sense of sustainability, your sense of nutrition and getting people to eat better and live better with a big company that needs to make money? And I guess what I'm really getting at is, has the company begun to see you as a force for profit now as much as a force for doing good? Because sustainability should be about saving money as well, you know, in the medium term.
Yeah, so I think it's been a journey for me as well. I haven't eaten meat since I was really young. I have been very much kind of on the green side, activist side on most issues and most things in the world for the majority of my life and definitely my adult life. And I've thought about if I should stay. I started because I wanted to be closer to my sister. And I thought that I would work for Unilever for 1 year because I was not in favor of their products. When I started to work here, I learned more about the initiatives in making sustainable living commonplace, which is basically about when I started, when this journey really, really started for our brands was 10 years ago. And that's when I started. And I thought, I do want to be on this journey because this is how you shift the masses.
If you're outside it, you can't do anything. If you're inside it, you can make a change.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, I could work for a tiny brand that I love and I eat every day and I support. Of course, I could, you know, probably be part of a company that was creating, you know, hugely great for the planet products. But would that reach the masses? No. And when you change one little thing in a food product in Knorr or Hellmann's or Vegetarian Butcher or so on and so forth in Unilever, you're making major changes for the health of people on the planet all over the world. And that's a huge impact to make. And of course, some days I think, oh gosh, I wish I was in just a little hippy dippy team working in my own silo. But majority of the time, you know, I think that the teams that I work with are absolutely fantastic. And of course, sometimes they say, we're not going to do this. It's crazy. And sometimes we do it. And sometimes we don't. But I think that it's the process and the success of making an impact for the masses that has allowed me to stay and allowed me to feel really good getting up every day and feeling like I am doing the right thing. And you know, this is the company that I want to be part of. And it's hard. And we can only get there if people like me continue to work in these companies.
And that's a really important part, sort of getting up and saying to yourself, am I doing the right thing? Now, let's think about the people that this particular podcast is really aimed at. We're looking at careers. We're looking at people who are thinking about moving into the industry, thinking about taking a particular course at university maybe. Tell us why you have succeeded. How have you succeeded? What are the quirks that you've needed? And what are the skills that you've had to put into play? Is it about sustainability or is it about communications? Is it about no understanding food or is it about being able to write an angry note saying, come on, we got to do this? What's your secret?
I don't write angry notes. I think there's two big pieces. I mean, yes, you have to be educated and yes, you have to have your degree and yes, you have to check all the boxes. But there's two big pieces that I'd like to share. And one is you have to be able to think about things. And I say that in a very careful way because we think in silos. So we think about, you know, why do people eat certain foods? And then we think, you know, because they're available or because of this. Or we think, why do people grow foods in this way? But we don't think about the entire process and we don't think big enough generally. And I think the reason why I've been successful is very much about thinking about things, anything. And in my particular world, food, about the whole process. You have to be able to think things through, untangle them, and pull the thread that people care about in every conversation. So that's a key. It's like playing a little marionette game in a sense. And You know, how do you talk to a mass consumer about making small changes, like taking a little bit of beef out and putting lentils in or black beans instead? But then how do you also talk to farmers to help them understand that their yields would be higher if they use less pesticides and they do cover cropping? And how do you remember how to pull each lever across the whole complexity of the food system? I think that's one really big one that has been a big part of me being able to move around and communicate in the way that I do. It's very much about complexity to simplicity, even in my strictly nutrition roles. I think that's a really big one. I think the second one is giving people passion. So giving people the tools to feel as passionate as you do, because that's really why things change in the end. It's, you can have skills and knowledge, but you have to be an empathic listener and you have to perpetrate and give the gift of passion. And that's how things will change. So I think those two things, in addition to, you know, of course, constantly learning and keeping up to date and saying sorry when you make mistakes, because you do, things like that. And I think the third one is a forward thinker. So being able to think about the future, and that's a really hard one. And that's hard in marketing as well, because we want to, you know, put something on the front of a pack and have sales go up tomorrow. Mm. And that's very different in the space of human and planetary health. And the measures that we take take time. So you have to be a forward thinker and help people think to the future. Yeah. So I think those three things are probably the unique parts that have enabled me to get to where I am in my career, of course, on top of skills and abilities and certifications and things like that.
Yeah. But you must also be ferociously intelligent, because you have to be a master of you're a multidisciplinarian. You have to understand, as you say, crop cycles. You've got to be able to talk about stuff on packaging. You've got to, yeah, be able to talk about what's in a pack.
Yeah.
That must be enormously difficult to be aware of so much technology, concepts, retail. It's a terrifying idea to me. Do you just spend a huge amount of your time just keeping up with what the hell is going on?
Yeah, I do. I have to say I do. And I must say that my friends and family would agree that this is the topic I talk about. So I'm kind of, you know, maybe multidisciplinary within this area. I can't tell you what's on television. I can't tell you many other things, but I can talk about this topic in basically many different languages. It does take up, you know, a majority of my life, and that's because I'm really passionate about it. I mean, I listen to podcasts about it when I'm cleaning my house. I read things about it. Just last night, I had a dinner party, and I talked about it with my friends, and really I talked about the big thinking concept, because they were asking me questions like, is it just local and seasonal? And that's the thing about food that's so interesting to me, is that it's not just one answer. It's hugely complex. It's also emotional and cultural, and it's so much to the world. And I think that's really why I allow it to take up so much of my time.
Yeah, and quite right too, if it's something you're passionate about. Okay, let's get specific now. I know that you've got some particular projects at Unilever which are very focused on environmental concerns. Talk to me about Future 50 Foods partnership with the WWF.
Sure. So we launched Future 50 Foods in February of 2019, and that was really the first big push that Knorr had, the largest food brand in Unilever, that Knorr had to go out to say, look, we're part of this. We need to be part of the solution, and we need to sit at the table along with the small brands, the hippy dippy brands, maybe we say, along with the NGOs and the government. And you may not want us at the table right now, but we got to be there. And this is our gift to the world, to say we need to be there, and we need to shift the narrative to be about what foods we should eat as opposed to the foods that we shouldn't eat. And that was the intention. That is the intention of this piece of work, which has gone on, of course, to be a big strategic piece for the brand, onto a cookbook, and onto being on kind of the menus of many. There's loads of airlines that have Future 50 Foods on them and reference them, and also menus. A couple here in the Netherlands have them on there. I see them kind of popping up everywhere on a grocery store website. I saw Future 50 Foods mentioned. And we're absolutely delighted and proud to see it in all these spaces, because it's a thought leadership piece that we did together with WWF UK, as you said, to talk about the food system issues in a way that makes sense, and then go on to identify 50 of the many foods that we can eat and grow that will help fix those problems. So it's really quite a cool equation that we put together with it to say, you know, we do have these food system problems, but you can help by changing what's on your plate. And that's a major, I would say that's an empowerment piece to give individuals to say, you know, we know climate change is happening. We know that the future of food is a little bit daunting at this point if we continue in the way that we're going. But there is something that we can do. And there's something that we can do in the space of variety and flavor. And that's what these Future 50 foods are. So some of them are ones that you know and you might eat often, like spinach and wild rice. Other ones are ones that maybe in this part of the world we've never heard of, like bimbir, groundnut, marama bean, moringa. And the intention was to really reach out to gather 50 kind of magical foods that can grow different places, grow in the face of climate change, grow underwater, above water, in degraded soil and cover crops and so on and so forth, to really say what we eat can really fix the planet as opposed to do less harm.
And are there any surprising examples on that Future 50? Anything that you kind of think, oh, I didn't think that would be one?
Probably. You probably think spinach, because spinach is so common. But actually, of all the Future 50 foods, it's the most nutrient dense. So we utilized a nutrient index score, which means nutrients per calories, for, to get to the nutrient score. And spinach is the highest. So we couldn't ignore it.
This plays straight into your skills already, doesn't it? It's perfect.
Yeah, so that's happy to say that I, together with WWF, created the criteria, and it's very similar to kind of the definition of sustainable food and how you identify those foods. So, yeah. But on from that, there's been other things that I think are probably worth talking about as well in this space, and Future 50 Foods has gotten us the fame, and that was when we really put our foot out to say, you know, we want to be part of this, and it did get us at the table. It did get us to the table. And it was able to say, you know, we want to be part of this. And the other big one that we just did, which I'm super duper excited about, which was a big feat to push across, was working with NOAR on getting the regenerative agriculture principles integrated into 50 projects with our suppliers, moving 80% of our ingredients to be grown following these practices and these principles.
Wow, that's big news, isn't it?
Yeah, by 2026. Yeah. That was just hit the media a couple of weeks ago, right before COP26, on purpose, of course.
And funny that.
Yeah, I'm hugely, hugely proud of that. I'm really proud of Unilever for pushing it across. It's a big investment. I'm hugely passionate and really proud of that piece as well.
Only me here, just hopping in to remind you about another careers podcast that we've made for Table Talk, which you might enjoy. It was with Sophie Kaplan, a flavours communication specialist, and Alex Reary, specialist in food and drink brand strategy and storytelling. It was a fascinating journey. We talked about their personal values and how that influenced their career choices, how to get ahead in their size of the industry, and how to switch from one career path to another, no matter what you've studied at college or university. It's on the website, alongside nearly 200 other episodes of Table Talk. It's quite a treasure trove. Check it out at foodmatterslive.com. Now, back to the conversation. Okay, let's now get to the nuts and bolts of this as a careers kind of podcast. Now, let's give some careers advice. What are the subjects that you should study to get the best opportunities in this sector, do you think? I mean, you know, at uni there are a lot more, sustainability is a name that's included in a lot more courses these days. Is that the important thing, or is it the passion behind it, or the personal projects that have sustainability at their heart? How should students be going about making their way to where you are now?
My first comment would be, although I know I have the word sustainability in my title, is that sustaining is no longer what we need to do. We need to restore and regenerate. So my first tip would be that if you want to be in this space, look for a university that has topics that are actually called something like environmentally resourceful or regenerating nature or fixing what we've done, things like that. So I think that is a navigation.
If there was a course called Fixing What We've Done, yeah! That would be brilliant. I love that. No messing about.
I like to teach that. Yeah, I think that in itself is, I think, something that if I were to go back, I would look for things like that, because sustaining is, it's almost like that's the old school word. So I think the word environment, planet, things like that are things you want to go for. The other piece that I would say is that every single skill is needed across the whole board. So if you love data science, you can do, you know, data and science behind environmental sustainability, because we need to be able to kind of track, monitor, learn, and scale up from a data perspective. And we need AI integrated into farms and into monitoring. And we actually need it all the way into behavior change on what people will put on their plate. So we need data science. We need technology gurus. We need people that are amazing communicators and influencers. We need great scientists from a food technology perspective. We need agricultural experts for sure. So we need kind of plant breeding experts. So it's almost across the entire spectrum. So whatever you're interested in, it's almost like find what you're interested in and then put it on top of it, because you're going to need that underskill and then learn about the environmental part and utilize what your skill is and what your passion is for that, because we're going to need all of it. So if you love digitization, then figure out how you can implement that into being more environmentally resourceful across the chain. You know, and I think that's really what I would advise is it isn't just my skill isn't just knowing about the food system and nutrition and agriculture. It's about the other stuff, about influencing and communicating and those things. So it's really about what is your skill and your passion naturally, and then on top of that, learn about how that can be utilized to help fix the planet and help fix what we've done to the environment.
Yeah, exactly. And it does help if you're a fantastic talker like you are. Okay, let's talk about the big issue of policy. Yeah. So COP26 has just happened. We're talking about this a few days after it's been closed off. The UK government certainly is promising hundreds of thousands of green jobs, and whether that means greener jobs than they are now. But I'm interested in what the Dutch government has going on. In your view, is there enough being done by governments to support the changes that are needed?
Of course I say no. I don't think anybody's doing enough to support the changes that are needed. We're in a major, major environmental crisis, and we should be absolutely ashamed that we got here and doing everything we can to reverse what we've done. And I think everybody has a role to play, and the government, the policymakers absolutely do. And there needs to be, I know there's loads of, you know, fines and things like this that are going to be flying around, but I really like to think about the positive effect that we can have. So how can we actually incentivize the companies that are doing good? And how can we incentivize the farmers and the suppliers that are doing the right thing? And how can we share these learnings? And how can we work better, actually, cross continent and cross countries to share those learnings and to really be able to free up different experts and free up different technologies? And because everybody wants to be, of course, competitive and wants to win and make the most money, then a lot of these different types of technologies and things are going to become patented. And I think that there's a role for policy to say, we're all in this together, and you can't have a competitive advantage, because the only advantage is if we fix the planet.
Yep.
So I think there's still a lot more in the incentivization space that can happen. And the opening up. And I think those are the two big spaces that I would say that haven't been touched enough.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's hope that change will happen around there. But for my last question then, this is a tricky one, really, but is there one huge change? And this could be a change that is maybe not possible to achieve, but is there something that the food industry desperately needs to do? And it could be something that you feel is impossible to do at the moment. Is there one big thing that would change everything, that would almost release the blockage in a way to really help to make sustainability a successful tool for companies?
Well, the way we're going to really change the food system is to change what people love to eat. And in order to do so, we need to make food that's good for people and the planet, the most affordable, the most beautiful, and the most delicious. So that's what we all need to work toward doing, is really growing the demand and the availability of that food so that those are the foods that are grown. And that's how it will be fixed. Of course, there's loads along the way and loads that needs to happen across the whole supply chain in order to also positively impact the livelihoods of all of the fabulous people that grow our food and across the system. And the way that that really changes, the way that the world changes, is really by consumerism. And we can't buck that. And I think that's what I would hope that we all work to do, is to make those foods the most favorable and desirable and affordable.
I think you're right. And to make them the most delicious.
Yeah.
And to make people absolutely want them.
Exactly.
And that's the trick. Yeah. Simple as that.
Simple as that.
So if there are any students listening, that's all you need to do, is make food delicious, affordable. I mean, how hard can it be? Dorothy, you have been an absolute joy to talk to. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. It was a pleasure.
Excellent. Well, you've been listening to Dorothy Shaver, Global Marketing Sustainability Lead at Unilever. Now, this is just one of several editions on Green Jobs. The next edition will be coming soon. Keep an eye on the website for more personal stories from the Green Revolution. That's foodmatterslive.com. If you enjoyed this episode, you might like one of our other podcasts, in which we explore pretty much every aspect of the food industry, from food security to editions with disruptors like Josh Tetrick. Recent highlights include episodes on the explosion in the protein bar market and a detailed look at the ag tech boom in Singapore. Follow to get every episode freshly delivered to you on Apple, Spotify, Google, or your preferred podcasting platform. And thank you so much for listening.